Good afternoon. Roger's my name. I'm the chair for today's, this afternoon's session with Steve. So I'd just like you to welcome Steve Shibura. Some of you may know, but and possibly have listened to Steve before, but he's spoken here definitely last year and possibly a few more before that, I believe.
My third time.
You might want to put your...
This is my third time.
Yep. Good. Can everyone hear Steve now?
I'll speak up. Don't worry. Great. Thank you.
Just a couple of questions then as we get to know Steve a little bit. Can you just tell us a bit about your family situation and, if you was a bloke?
Been married to my wife for 10 years now. We don't have children, but God willing, that will be able to happen sometime in the future. That's about it. My wife and I live in Camperdown in Sydney City, with all the other right-wing conservatives. I think when Ray was saying pray for the ministers in the inner west, I felt like yelling out, just pray for the inner west.
Great. And thank you. So I believe you work at a university and you're sort of researching. So can you tell us a little bit about...
For the last 11, 12 years, I was lecturing and researching at Macquarie University, and now I'm mainly lecturing at Campion College, which is a small liberal arts college in Sydney's outer west. And I also do a lot of work for the Lachlan Macquarie Institute, which is a program for training young Christian leaders in all sorts of spheres of life, culture, media, politics, policy, and those kinds of things. And when I can, I also do a lot of writing for the media and things like that. So I try to keep pretty busy.
Right. Sounds as though you're doing well at that. Another question then, broadly. What are the things that you do to be an active Christian guy?
Well, I mean, behaviourally, I suppose, you know, the things that I do is I think it's very important to maintain a regular Bible reading schedule. I honestly do think that the Bible is best read with other people, and I think that's one of the reasons a lot of people find it hard to read the Bible, because to sort of have the discipline to sit down on your own to do it, which is why I think actually going to a weekly Bible study is a good thing. But certainly, yeah, Bible reading, a serious prayer time, and church attendance. They're sort of the main things. But then there's also, you know, I make my living teaching and reading, and so I'm always reading a lot of Christian literature and constantly trying to understand the world from a Christian point of view, so that when I am asked to talk about the world, I can do so in a way that's helpful to Christians and non-Christians. So I'm pretty lucky in that respect that I get paid to do that kind of thing.
Great. So thank you. So just as far as the session now, Steve's going to go through his talk for 35, 40 minutes, as he said to me, until he runs out of information or things to say, which I'm not sure whether that's the case or not, whether you run out.
Well, the subject matter's pretty mysterious, so you never know.
Yes. Just so you know, the do's and don'ts relating to the re-imaged woman. There you go. Just making sure you're in the right place. At the end of Steve's talk, there'll be time for some questions, so please hold your questions until then. And I will, at that point, I'll get up and we'll sort of try and go through our questions in an orderly manner. Great. Thank you, Steve.
Thank you very much, Roger. I appreciate that. Well, I mean, this is a topic I was asked to do, and I mean, brave is the man who claims to be an expert on women. Now, last year I spoke on sort of the history of secularism and things like that, and I've written a book on that, so I can sort of claim some expertise in that. But this topic is very, very sort of practical knowledge, and I was briefed last year when I was asked to give this talk to make it as practical as possible, and so for me, what that means is trying to share with you a lot of the things that I have learned over the years in my own interactions with women. And like most men, I've learned for the most part through trial and error. Just doing the wrong things, saying the wrong things. And so I'm really sort of, those of you who are sort of older than me, you're a lost cause. There's nothing I can do for you, you know. But those of you who are younger than me, I hope that maybe you'll gain something from some of the practical bits of advice that I have to give. But I will start off talking about a few things that are a bit more theoretical and then get into the do's and don'ts of this. So of course, issues relating to men and women, masculinity, femininity, they're sort of really big on the public radar at the moment because of all sorts of gender movements like transgenderism and of course the Jordan Peterson phenomenon, and I'm a big fan of Jordan Peterson. Of course, I know he's not Jesus. I get that, but I do think there's a lot of what he says that's worth listening to. So it's actually worth, especially what he has to say about gender and things like that. I'm not necessarily going to recommend his talks on the Bible. I have absolutely no opinion on them whatsoever. I haven't heard them, but his talks on male and female, that kind of thing, very worth listening to, in my humble opinion. So I think the first thing that we need to be clear about is that there is this lie that is going around to the effect that sort of male and female are basically just social constructs. That when we think about what it is to be a male, when we think about what it is to be a female, that these are really just ideas planted in our minds through social practice over hundreds of years, that they don't sort of anchor themselves to anything objective, either in our nature as human beings or in the nature of the mind of the creator of us as human beings. Sort of what you might call the social constructivist point of view on gender. And I'm going to distinguish between sex and gender soon. But I think it's actually really important to be clear that from a biblical perspective, before there was society, there was male and female. Before the complex economic systems and all sorts of things that emerged that many gender theorists say created our conceptions of gender, God created them male and female. And male and female were different. I would say that they're obviously different in the obvious form that of sort of reproductive organs and things like that. That's obvious. But there are also psychological differences as well. I won't go into that in great depth, but from the biblical point of view, male and female are to be distinguished from one another, and they are not grounded just in human convention. They are grounded in the will of God and in our nature as human beings. And that goes one step further, that in the book of Genesis, the Lord said, "It is not good for the man to be alone. I will make a helper suitable for him." And that indicates that not only is there male and female, but there are, in fact, in the mind of God, different roles for men and for women. And when you look at the book of Genesis, the woman is created to be a partner, but also a helper. And so the notion that God really had no plan in terms of how men and women were meant to relate to one another is simply false. The purpose of God creating woman, or at least one of them, is to help man. Not to be man's slave, but to be a helper. And of course, there's much more to be said about this, but the point is that there was a plan in God's mind, and I would argue that, and I think that the Bible would certainly teach that when we best conform to God's plan, things will actually go better for us. There's much more to be said about that, but I'll leave that there. Now, this distinction between sex and gender. Well, 70, 80 years ago, sex and gender meant more or less the same thing. They were often used interchangeably. But over the last sort of 30, 40 years, they've been used differently. Sex tending to mean just the brute biological differences between men and women, the chemical differences and the sex organ genitalia differences and things like that. Whereas gender was sort of taken to mean more character traits that characterize a particular sex. So gender will be sort of more about the tendency of men to be aggressive in a physical way, the tendency for men to be more universalistic in their thinking, and then, you know, the tendency for women to be more empathetic, the tendency for women to focus on the internal, the subjective more. But, and I'm actually okay with that, and I find that most Christians who think about the distinction between sex and gender are fine with that, that there's a difference between sex and gender. But where many people make a mistake, they make a mistake in saying that gender has nothing to do with your sex. That is, that the brute physical facts of what it is to be a male and the brute physical facts of what it is to be a female don't in any way shape masculine or feminine behaviour, that kind of behaviour or gender is something socially constructed. Now, science is increasingly showing what most ordinary people have always believed, that is, that the physical properties of men do actually create, as a generalisation, a way of thinking, a way of acting that is masculine. The physical properties of women do actually go to create a pattern of behaviour that we would describe as feminine. So gender is connected to biology. This is such a huge topic, but let me point you to just one recent study. This is from 2018 in the journal Infant and Child Development. Basically, they did a literature review, and they found that what the literature shows is that even babies, and certainly very young children, have different habits when it comes to playing with toys. And it sort of showed that, well, little girls, even sort of just postnatal, will tend to gravitate towards toys that are more personal, that would have a personality, so dolls and things like that, things with a face. Whereas boys will tend to gravitate towards objects, and they will interpret them as objects. So the girls are more interested in relating to something on a personal level. The boys are not so interested in that. And there have been other experiments to the effect that, you know, a baby boy and a baby girl will each be given a mobile phone with an image of a face on it. And what they find is that the girls are actually more interested in the face, whereas the boys are interested in the actual object. How does it feel? What does it sound like when you drop it? And things like that. So, that's right. It sounds like about $110 to fix the screen, which my wife found out the hard way about 4 weeks ago. Here's another interesting phenomenon. It's called the gender equality paradox. And some of you may have heard of this, but it seems to be the case that in the most progressive liberal democratic countries in the world, and this is particularly the Nordic countries, that the more the government facilitates and emphasizes gender equality, and the more it tends to encourage women to go into fields of engineering and science and math and things like that, and the more opportunities they have to do it or not to do it, paradoxically what they found is that women will tend to gravitate actually to more traditionally female roles of nurturing and creativity and things like that. So when you actually give women the option to do whatever they like, they actually gravitate towards, in some ways, stereotypical feminine roles. Now, the devil is in the detail. How do you interpret this? And that's a controversial thing, but many people are using it as evidence to suggest that, well, you know something. You can send people a message as much as you want from the government and from education that you can do this if you want. This is really good for you to do. But at the end of the day, there is a kind of biological or biopsychological factor that leads, as a generalization, men to think and behave in one particular way and women to behave in another particular way. And of course, we're just talking generalizations here. But the point is that there is very good scientific evidence to suggest that gender is not merely a social construct. It is not merely a social construct. That there is such a thing as masculinity, there is such a thing as femininity, they're different. And so classically the literature says, well, you know, obviously, you know, men are more sort of physically aggressive than women. Of course, women can be aggressive, you know. But the kind of aggression that men will tend to explore will be physical, whereas the kind of aggression women will tend to explore is often what's called passive-aggressive. So women are passive-aggressive, so they'll actually attack men and women, but not through violence, through other ways. So they'll be in a room and they'll just deliberately snub a woman that they don't want to, whereas a guy might, if he's really got a peak against another guy, he might confront him and hopefully, if he really wants to do something, but hopefully it'll escalate to the point where they can get violent. Here's something that's interesting. Does anyone remember this? You remember this? Yeah, this is interesting. Now the fellow on the right is an American social commentator, Ben Shapiro. I've got to tell you, I'm a big Ben Shapiro fan. He's worth watching. He's an Orthodox Jew, wonderful social commentator, definitely worth watching. Anyhow, he was in a debate on the Dr. Drew show, and sitting to his right was a transgender person who's obviously, as you can see, born a man and has transitioned, in his words, into a woman. And of course, this whole segment was Ben Shapiro basically saying, well, look, you know, you're not really a woman. You're a man. And at one point, Ben Shapiro turned to him and said, and what is your DNA, sir? And the bloke lurched over, grabbed Ben Shapiro by the back of the neck and said, you say that again, you're going to go home in an ambulance. What happened there? That's right. The man came out. I've never, ever seen a woman do something like that. It's not to say I haven't seen girls in a fight before, but that kind of behaviour I have not seen. That was the man coming out. That was very, very interesting, and you see it right there. Look at that. See that relationship there? That is a big man exerting his dominance over a smaller man. Interesting stuff. Here's another one here. What's this? Here's another journal. Translational psychology. Again, this is from 2018. Studies in infant humans have identified sex differences in the developmental precursors to empathy. Basically, what the argument argues is that, you know, from the time of sort of babyhood, they can see that in actual fact, women tend to be more empathetic than men. Now, remember, we're talking about generalizations here. And the nature of a generalization is that there are always exceptions. There can always be exceptions. So when you say women tend to be more empathetic than men, what you're really saying is sort of the average woman is more likely to be more empathetic than the average man. Of course, you will find some very, very empathetic men out there. Now, an interesting question is, so, you know, Is a very, very empathetic man, is he a woman? And this is where it gets really difficult in some ways because, I mean, the answer is no. I mean, now we all know that there are some women who tend to have more masculine traits than other women. Historically, you would call them tomboys. Nowadays, you call them transgenders, but no. But historically, they might be called tomboys. And they were, of course, girls who were interested in masculine things. And there are also men who might not fall into classical male stereotypes. That they may be more empathetic, they may be more articulate when they communicate, and they may like communicating their feelings in a way that many men don't. Does that mean that they're closer to a woman than they are to a man? Well, of course not, because at the end of the day, the distinguishing feature between a woman and a man is sort of, really, when it comes down to it, the role in reproduction. And I think in one way we're so confused about maleness and femaleness because we've learned to control reproduction so well that the great thing that now distinguishes the woman from the man has sort of been lost on us. And now we're just looking at personality traits. Whereas once upon a time, and Ray Galea pointed this out very nice in his talk earlier, once upon a time there wasn't that much control over reproduction. And so a woman was, to a great extent, a reproducer. But once you control reproduction, then the connotation of women as reproducers sort of diminishes, and then you start focusing on other things, personality and character traits. But personality and character traits do actually exist on a kind of spectrum. You know, some men, again, are in some ways more masculine than other men. But of course, it doesn't make them less men. And that's another thing that we've got to be careful of, you know, stereotyping what masculinity and femininity are. I'll sort of touch on that in a second. Are women different now? Is there such a thing as the modern woman? Well, the answer to that is yes and no. I mean, I would actually say that fundamentally, probably modern Western women are actually very little different from Western women, say, 200 or 300 years ago, in that there are just certain things I think that pretty much all women want, even though soon I'll caution you against thinking that all women are the same. But no, in fact, you know, modern women in some respects are quite different. And I think a lot of this has to do with the fact that women have gone not just into the workforce. I mean, it's a myth to say, oh, one of the differences about women nowadays is they've gone into the workforce. Women have always been in the workforce. Anyone who knows their history will know that prior to the Industrial Revolution, women did actually make cloth in the home. They used cotton, they made cloth, and they sold it to haberdashers who would sell it to tailors. Women have worked forever. And I'm not just talking about domestic work raising children. I'm talking about remunerative labor. That is nothing new. Here's something that's probably new. The modern woman, the work that she does is in direct competition with men. They're working in the same offices, going for the same promotions and things like that. That is a different thing. And I actually think that probably it's just a theory, but I do actually think a lot of the characteristics of some of the more angry forms of feminism probably are a result of women having to compete in a work environment that is traditionally masculine and not competing well. And it's probably led to some arguably justified resentment. But that is something that is new, that women are now competing with men for the same jobs. That historically has not happened. And so there is a kind of new competitive edge to some women. This is such a huge topic. I mean, feminism, it tends to be something that appeals to middle-class women. Middle-class, careerist, relatively educated women will tend to gravitate more towards feminism. Whereas what you'll usually find is that working-class women aren't particularly interested in those things. They don't care that not many CEOs are women, because they're never going to be a CEO. They don't care about the male-female lawyer ratio and those kinds of things. They might care whether they can get a female doctor or not in a hospital, but the point is that feminism, the ideology of feminism, is like many other ideologies. The ideology of capitalism is something that, you know, really appeals to a class of people that are going to have a good chance of making a fair bit of money. And feminism's actually no different. It is an ideology that appeals to a particular kind of woman, and there is a sort of element of class involved. And so now why am I saying this? Well, because not all women are feminists. And that's an important thing to just remember, that feminism, whatever that is, it claims to speak for all women, but you'll actually find, you know, quite a lot of women, and some would say most women, don't really identify with feminism. Feminism probably most speaks to upwardly mobile middle-class women, which is important to point out, because that is one of the differences with modern women, that modern women, in a way that they were not 70, 80 years ago, are upwardly mobile in the workforce, and that does actually change the way that they relate to men. That's actually quite important. What is different? Well, children are either not being had or it's being delayed. Yes, they're entering into direct competition with men. They're economically independent. They're taught to think of themselves as independent agents, not as biological agents. And this all shapes the way that they see their relationship with men should be. At least the way they consciously think about it. There's a very strong argument to be made that in actual fact, subconsciously, some of the old ways of relating are still there. And perhaps it is the case that in many modern women, there's a kind of battle between the way they need to think about, or the way that the modern society wants them to think about how they should relate to men, as sort of, in some ways, competitors, as independent economically from, not as helper, with perhaps a deeper longing for something quite different. That is, I think that's actually quite plausible, actually. And so this actually leads us to the practical part. And so, although there are some things that I think women historically will always want, there are probably all sorts of new little pitfalls that we can fall into in terms of relating to modern women. And there's a sense in which understanding women, it's sort of an empirical science, if I could put it that way. This is a very male way of talking, isn't it? It's an empirical science. But, you know, you learn through trial and error. You know, you learn through trial and error. And you're going to now witness some trial and error. So now this is the practical part. I'm hoping, in particular, those who haven't embarked on dating yet or doing that. I really was serious in the blurb that I'm hoping that some of you between the age of 15 and 35 who are still trying to figure this out, maybe I can give you something that's useful here. And again, this really is seriously stuff that I have written down from my own experiences. So here we go. In relation to women, don't think that you're entitled to anything from them other than civility. What does that mean? That women, you're not entitled to a smile from a woman. You're not entitled to a second look. You're not entitled to anything other than them being polite. That's it. And if you act like you are so entitled, that will be quite unattractive and off-putting. Now, here's one of the neat things I'm going to do. I'm actually going to tell you the times where I think doing the right thing is quite attractive to a woman. So some of you think, oh, how can I be attractive to a woman? I'm going to actually give you some tips, because that's actually really important. There's nothing wrong with wanting to attract a woman. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that at all. In fact, everything about that is right. It's how the species propagates itself. Now, here's a really important one. Don't think that all women are the same. Easy trap to fall into, to think that all women are the same. And when you hear someone in the pub say they're all the same, it's not really true. You know, there are different kinds of women out there. And look, like men, some women are much more reasonable than other women. Some women are less sensitive than others, and some are more sensitive than others. You know, some are more girly than others. And you've got to just sort of remember that women are quite different. And the way to think about it is ask yourself, well, are all men the same? And I think anyone who knows enough men knows, well, no, they're not all the same. I mean, there are some things that pretty much all men want, and that's sex and respect. But, you know, other than that, the personalities of men are very, very different. But it's funny that we can all still get together as men and we sort of have that, we can sort of identify with one another on this level of human experience. But not all women are the same. But here's the thing, all women like politeness. All women like kindness. Now let me qualify that. There are some women out there that seem to respond cruelly when a man is kind to them. So if any of you ever watch Married at First Sight, and let me tell you, I mean the show is trash. Of course it's trash. But you know something, I never miss a season. I honestly don't. Because let me tell you, you will learn about men and women watching Married at First Sight. I honestly do believe that. I mean, don't take on the philosophy of Married at First Sight and that kind of thing, but I'm telling you right now, if you want to understand how men and women can work, watch those shows and you will see it very quickly. You'll see different types of women. And so there are some types of women on Married at First Sight, I can think of two right now, in the last one, that the nicer the men were to them, the more cruel they were back to the men. That is a type of woman. That is a type. Now, what's going on there? Possibly, I mean, there are a whole bunch of things that could be going on. They could have been damaged by a bad man in the past, and they're taking it out on men from now on. It may be the case that they are the kind of woman that either has to be sort of just feel in awe of a man and dominated by a man, or they have to dominate themselves. There can't really be any kind of equality. But you know, the point that I'm making is not all women are the same. And you sort of learn what a good woman for you is by trial and error. And through trial and error, you actually figure out who you are as well and what you want. Now, if you're the kind of guy that keeps gravitating towards women who treat you badly, then don't for a second think that the problem is with women. The problem's probably with you. You know, why are you attracting those women? Why do you get attracted to them? These are important things. Don't treat all women the same way. Now, this you might think, oh, I don't get that. Well, I mean, again, these are very practical things. The way you relate to women your own age as young men is not going to be the way you would relate to women who are old enough to be your mother. From a practical point of view, if a woman is old enough to be your mother, the way you speak to her is the way you would speak to your mother. You would treat her with the same respect that you would your mother. You would not speak to her as though she's a woman your own age. And the obvious same goes for older men with younger women. You would treat a younger woman as though she was your daughter. And it's funny, in my experience as a teacher, I'm finding now that I'm 40 now, so my students now start at the age of 18. I am actually at the age where sort of biologically they could be young enough to be my daughter, and I find that there's a sense in which the best way to relate to them now, I'm sort of through the phase where there was kind of the age awkwardness, where when I started teaching, I was about, what year was it? I was about 24, 25. And so I had students between the age of 18, 21, 23. And so there was this kind of, how do I relate to these people? It was a bit awkward. But now the awkwardness is almost gone. And I actually just now just relate to them. I just try to see female students as kind of like daughters. It might sound strange, but it actually is really helpful in terms of just making boundaries clear to yourself. It's not a bad way of thinking about it. There are more don'ts than do's, believe it or not. I don't know why that is. Here's a really crucial one for men, and this is something that men struggle with their whole lives, I think. Don't think that women are just like men. Men and women, in many ways, are extremely different. So, for example, you see a lot of men obsess over their bodies, obsess over their looks, because they want to be really, really attractive to women. But the thing is, they're thinking that women think like men. You see, men are, of course, quite preoccupied with looks. You might even say that for most men, an immediate physical sexual attraction is a kind of necessary condition for them wanting to move forward with a kind of relationship. It's not really the case with women. Women are a bit different. And sort of women sort of look at the whole package. I mean, for men, the whole package is the body. That's the whole package. But for women, the whole package is the personality. It is the looks. Now, this could be good news if you don't look like Brad Pitt. You know, this is great. But you know, there are some downsides to it, too. So, you know, women will look at income potential in a way that men won't. Here's the funny thing. This is what I say to people in terms of, I used to say this to my wife, and I say it to other women so they can understand men. For men, yeah, looks are very important, although as you get older and you have more experience, you realize that they shouldn't be the most important thing. But men will often judge one another based on how good their girlfriend or wife looks. And I sometimes say to my wife, if you could be in a room full of billionaire men, And you walk into that room, if you've got the most gorgeous woman by your side and you work at McDonald's, those men will look at you and envy you. That's a kind of masculine way of thinking. But women don't really think like that, like men. I was actually amazed in a Bible study once when we were talking about this, and us guys said, well, it's, you know, as a Christian man, you've really got to sort of get into the habit of fighting the lustful thoughts when you see a very attractive woman so you don't immediately sort of start disrobing her in your imagination. And the women were saying, yeah, well, there are a lot of attractive guys around as well. But what we discovered was that in actual fact, for the women there, when they think of a guy having a really good body or a guy being really good looking, their mind doesn't go to sex. I don't know what it goes to, but it doesn't go to sex. And I was actually quite, and they said, you know, we have to dwell on it for a while and then maybe it'll go to sex. But for a man, it's actually quite different. It goes pretty much immediately to sex if you let it. So again, women are quite different in that respect. And guys also. So that has its, you know, implications in marriage. No matter what a woman tells you before you get married, don't believe her. She is not going to have the sexual drive that you have as a man. There are some exceptions, but those are exceptions to the rule. And a good analogy between how sort of, for women, the equivalent of sex is communication, talking. If you deny communication to your wife, if you don't talk to them, they feel the same way that you feel when your wife just refuses to have sex with you. When you know that she could have sex with you, but she doesn't because she just doesn't feel like it. And it's been a long time since you had it. That kind of hurt and rejection is what women feel when men over time don't communicate with them as well. So there's it's possibly helpful thing to think that for women, sort of communication and talking with your wife at that kind of intimate level is sort of her equivalent of what sex is to you. And that's a very different way that men and women think. And so that's why often in relationships, sex breaks down, because often before that, communication has broken down. But that's not to say that if you get the communication right, then the sex will pick up. That is not true. There are no formulas. Sex in a marriage is something that you probably do actually have to talk about and actually set down expectations. Not sort of laying down the law, but something that actually you do need to have an agreement about and talk about. Otherwise, all sorts of sort of frustrations will occur. Singleness. So guys, women are much more sensitive about their singleness than men. And I think a lot of that is biological. So that's just something for you young guys. I mean, you wouldn't joke about singleness. You wouldn't make an open comment about a girl being single in mixed company. You would not do that because they find that very, very, they can often find that they're very self-conscious about that. These are things that I've done. I'm an idiot. This is a really important one, very important one. The relationship that women have to their bodies is very different to the relationship that men have to their bodies. So again, men's bodies are more sort of, I think, utilitarian. We sort of see our bodies quite apart from our personalities. We sort of see our bodies as something that is to be used, something outside of ourselves, something you can build up at the gym or something that, you know. Whereas for women, their body is really a part of who they are, their being, their personality. They're very close to their bodies. And if you talk about their bodies, they can get very, very uncomfortable. And so as a general rule, don't talk about women's bodies. And especially you young guys, if you're in mixed company, you might have all the sort of the best feelings and best sort of intentions in the world, but you would not talk about another woman's body. Even in marriages, many men learn after a while that you don't talk about, well, even the bits of her body that you like. You don't necessarily bring these things up because, again, women are quite self-conscious about these things. I'll even get into some nitty-gritty. It's not an unknown phenomenon that in sex, men like to keep the light on, women like to turn it off. Men like to see what's going on. Women just would rather not see themselves. We relate to our bodies very differently, so just be careful to keep that in mind when you're talking to women, and certainly when you're talking about women to other women. Very important. These are big mistakes that so many have made. Okay, this is actually another one. Never engage in crude sexual humour around women. Now, maybe that's obvious. I don't know. But women, again, women are smaller than men. They're very self-conscious about their bodies. When you engage in crude sexual humour about around them, they can actually feel threatened. They can feel that they are in the presence of a predator. You know, men, you know, rarely feel threatened by other women. It can happen, but generally speaking, you don't feel threatened around other women. Men, of course, feel threatened around other men. But women, and this will get to another point they'll talk about later, you know, women do think about things quite differently, and it'll also, again, make them feel self-conscious about their bodies. And if you're talking about sex around them and talking about nakedness, then women often, when a man is talking about something, they'll often relate it back to themselves. Or this is what he thinks of me. And so basically, as a rule, don't be crude, don't be sexually crude around women. Now, there are some women that you would say, oh, she's always telling those kinds of jokes. Often they're sort of younger women, they will often sort of grow out of it. And just because they're telling the jokes, believe it or not, doesn't necessarily mean that they want to hear you telling them. Don't necessarily look for consistency in these things. Now, gents, especially the younger ones, don't confuse empathy with attraction. Just because a woman is showing some interest in you doesn't mean that she's attracted to you. Doesn't mean she wants you to be her boyfriend. It just means that she's interested in you. Maybe you communicate well. Look, maybe she feels sorry for you. I don't know. I have a story about that involving myself. But so just because a woman is sort of paying you some attention doesn't necessarily mean she's attracted to you. Again, women are, you know, tend to be more empathetic. They tend to be more sympathetic. And if they see that you're, if, you know, for many women, if they see you're at a party and you've got no one to talk to, they might actually come up to you and talk to you because they'll be feeling bad. They'll think, oh, look at that poor guy. I'll go. Doesn't mean they're attracted to you though. And what is it, how do you know if they're attracted? Well, that's a long story. That's a long story. Okay. Chivalry. Is chivalry dead? Well, no, but it just expresses itself mainly in a different way. Don't force your chivalry or leadership onto women. Fellas, if you hold a door open for a woman and she says after you, well, that's kind of silly because you opened it and all that, but it does happen. And let women hold a door for you, you know. You've just got to be careful. These are tricky things to negotiate. There's no formula. This is my thing. You see, I hate being a man, and possibly traditionally minded, I hate sitting down in a bus when there's any woman standing, whether she's young or old. I hate it. So if it looks like in that bus there will be a shortage of seats, I just stand. Now, that's just my way of avoiding awkward situations where I might say to someone, would you like my seat? And they say no, and then I wind up looking like a bit of a goose. And so that's just a really practical thing for me. Now, obviously, if you have to sit down, you have to sit down. But now, if you are trying to be nice to a woman and she just rebuffs you, don't be aggressive back. Because here's the thing. Very often there'll be other women watching that woman and judging her. And the other women will say, what a bitch. I say, why is she being... He's just a nice guy. But if you act aggressive back, they will then think that you're kind of the aggressor. So just don't forget when you interact with women, even if you interact with a bad woman, and there are bad women out there, like there are bad men, keep you cool and, you know, try to be, you know, reasonable to them and not lose your cool, because again, other women could see you and that is a very attractive quality to them. And if you do something nice for a woman, yep, 2 minutes, gosh, we're doing all right. Don't make a big deal about your chivalry, okay? Because that's very unattractive to women. They'll just think you're bragging and that kind of thing. And when you're around men, don't forget that there are also women around. And what I mean by that is when guys often get together, they'll talk to one another as though the women aren't there, because guys like to relate to guys. And women do it as well. You get around a group of women and they will just start talking about women things. They'll start talking about relationships and things like that, and you're standing there. Try to sort of just remember that they are there. Okay, so the last slide. In relation to women, always remember that the woman you are encountering is someone's daughter or sister or mother or wife. Treat them accordingly. You know, this woman is the wife of another guy. So even if even if you principally respect men, respect the man that is possibly married to this woman. But obviously we would all want to respect women as well. But that's just something to remember, that these women are attached to other people and they are attached to men. Here's a really practical one. When you shake a woman's hand, don't do this. Let me tell you right now, women tend to hate that. Take their whole hand, don't crush it, but in a firm handshake, and give them a proper handshake. It lets them know that you see them as an equal, and it's also actually quite attractive too, because they actually feel your strength. They're feeling your skin, they're feeling your strength. Again, that can be a very attractive thing. But don't sort of treat them like a little China doll. They'll just think that you're a jerk a lot of the time. So that's for the young guys there. In other words, don't make a big deal about the fact that they are weaker than you. I guess that's what I'm saying. Oh, weak, fragile thing. Don't do that. Just a good, solid handshake, but don't also be trying to prove anything with your handshake. I'll sort of keep moving down. Here's another thing. Most women like men. Men and women drive one another up the wall. It's the absolute truth. Men drive women up the wall, women drive men up the wall, but it doesn't mean that we don't like one another. You know? So don't get into your heads, don't listen to a lot of online stuff that suggests that women don't like men anymore. That's not the truth. Women like men. And don't forget that. And so feel free to offer to help them if they need help. And as I've said, don't display annoyance. Here's an interesting, listen to women. Women find it very attractive when you listen to them. And women frequently have very unique perspectives, particularly on relationships. I mean, I didn't understand people until I befriended a woman who was a bit older than me. And she was about 10 years older than me. And she started explaining relationships and people to me, because I started dating later in life at the age of 27. And you really start to properly understand women when you're sort of in a sort of intimate relationship with them. Again, that's a long story, but the point is women are very much worth listening to, especially when you want to understand relational matters and things like that. Just finally, feel free to hold women to the same standards as you would hold men. There is such a thing as toxic femininity. Women will destroy one another's lives, just like a man will beat another man to the point of death. They will do it, but they'll do it with words or a lack of words. And there's nothing wrong with calling that out when you see it. Again, there's much more to be said. Remember also that the life experience of a woman is different to the lived experience of a man. They don't feel as safe socially. We generally feel safe. And, you know, women also tend to be sick much more often than men. And so that's something, again, young guys, as a practical piece of advice, always just remember that there's a high likelihood that the women around you, some of them are sick. Some women are just sick all the time. They're just not as healthy as men, for the most part. Finally, and this is, always treat women in such a way that you will keep your moral authority. I think that the Bible teaches that men have a kind of moral authority. And I actually think that good women tend to look to their man as a source of moral and spiritual authority. And at a talk I was giving once, someone asked the question, you know, why should we wait till we're married to have sex? And the best answer I could give a guy, because lots of answers go out there. Oh, well, if you don't wait, then it's not special anymore in marriage. These are feminine answers. No man really is going to sort of think, oh, it's not going to be special anymore. No. I think that's a feminine way of thinking. To be honest with you, I mean, the two reasons are that the God who created you and could destroy you tomorrow has said don't. But secondly, if you're having sex with your woman and you're not married to her, you lose your moral authority and she doesn't look to you as a moral guide. And you lose something really important to your masculinity. So always behave towards your women and in your own self and treat them in such a way that you don't lose your moral or your God-given moral authority. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thanks, Steve. I think you were talking to not only the young guys, but I think the older ones were learning also, at least I was. We have a short time for questions. Please, can you? We don't have a microphone, so please ask your question clearly and loudly, and I'll ask Steve to repeat it for us all then hear it.
One over here and one here. Okay. Yep. Thank you.
Hi. Thanks a lot. I just had a question back to the theory stuff and the toy experiment.
Yep.
You know how the scientists separated the social from the innate stuff in those studies? Particularly, have you read anything by Cordelia Fine?
No. But you've obviously read some of this stuff.
I've read one book once.
Okay. Well, what I read about them was that in actual fact, some of these experiments were taking place within weeks of birth. Within about 2 to 3 months. And so it's pretty hard for the kind of social indoctrination to really get into a 2 to 3 month old human being. But now there are some feminist theorists who say, no, even there, it's still social indoctrination that the girls gravitate towards things that seem to be more personality based than the boys don't. So the answer to your question is, how do we know that no sort of social influences have crept in? Because of the temporal proximity to birth. These are really, really young human beings. That would be the best answer I could offer, and that is outlined in the studies as well. Thank you. Yeah?
These are two questions. They're very short.
Oh, you're a sneaky one.
What is sexual harassment, and what is sexy?
What is sexy? Well,
and the first question.
Yeah, what is sexual harassment? Well, gosh. Sexual harassment, I suppose, is when you would deliberately make any reasonable woman feel threatened or uncomfortable owing to actions that you engage in of a sexual nature. That's my definition of sexual harassment. Notice I said a reasonable woman. Okay, so that's the... Now, I know... So that would be my definition. Second, what is sexy? Whatever makes you want to have sex with a particular woman. That's what's sexy.
How about one and then two, and then we'll finish.
Yeah. For remembering? Yeah. Well, the experts on remembering things are women, so you should ask them. You know? Not really. I mean, look, to be honest with you, you know, I used to be, well, yeah, forget once. That's how you'll never forget again. But seriously, I used to have a terrible memory until I started reading regularly. And reading actually exercises the brain, and it actually does lead you to remember more. That's a very boring answer, but like the old saying, how do you remember your wedding anniversary or forever forget it once? I'm in your hands, Roger. Yeah.
Last one.
You mentioned never to talk about women's bodies.
Yeah.
Wives generally do talk about the bodies in terms of insecurity repeatedly.
Yep. That's true.
How,
yeah, that's
how
true.
How do you
yeah.
answer that if they, you know, frequently bring up their insecurity about particular bodies, especially after
Yep. Well, you know, I mean, again, I haven't had a pregnant wife, but yeah, you're quite right. I mean, I said don't talk about their body parts, but you will find that women incessantly talk about their bodies. Watch a woman comedian. Seriously, watch a woman comedian. What you'll find is they often come back to talking about their bodies. In the case of a woman who's obviously dissatisfied with her body, what you would want to do is sort of say, well, look, you know, I still find you attractive, but I can see that you're upset. What can I do to help? Here's the thing. I know a lot of guys who, you know, their wives have children both men and women let themselves go and they both want to get back into shape. Nothing wrong with that. But what the guys need to do is basically follow the same rules that the woman follows. So if he wants to get his wife back into shape and she kind of wants to get back into shape, then he has to go on the diet as well. He has to go to the gym as well. You've got to do it with her. Otherwise, often they just won't do it. And so that's a good tip. But again, you know, it's not going to work with everyone. I shouldn't say any more. We've sort of run out of time. It's the sort of thing you could talk about for half an hour easily.
Yeah. Can we put it to an end there, please? I'm sorry, I can see there's many questions. We all relate to women in our lives. Two things. We obviously have one last talk to listen to. So, Dominic Steele, what is man's purpose? So, please don't, I know probably a lot of us would love to come and talk and ask questions of Steve now. Steve, will you be around after Dominic's talk for long? Do you have to rest?
I'm going to be around.
Again, if you really have a burning question, try and track him down after Dominic's, talk maybe. Grab him in the courtyard. Let's pray now, bow our heads and we'll give thanks for Steve's comments, and we'll pray for Dominic as he speaks. Dear Lord, we thank you that we learn so much as we listen to each other. Thank you for Steve's words and his encouragement to think about relationships with women and coming from a Christian perspective. Lord, we also pray now for Dominic as he teaches us from your word and helps us to understand what is man's purpose coming from God. Please, Lord, help us to listen well, help us to love our wives, help us to talk to them and to listen to them. Amen. That's okay.